But just to give you some idea of that, every time I wanted to go to sleep, there was thunderstorms. They were flying over Vietnam, and they were going to shoot me down again. And then there was some horrible weather. Continental are air-cooled engines, and they don't know the square root of fine all about how to do a coolant pump. And the coolant pump seal, it gave us all kinds of problems, and we dumped the coolant out of the airplane, and it would leak, and they worked and worked and worked. And even after I suggested that they go out in the parking lot, open the hood, those guys have been making coolant pumps for 100 years. Oh, no, that's car where airplanes can't do that. The long and the short of it was, he came to us just before takeoff, and he had a pump in his hand. He said, "Dick, we tried the best we can. I can only guarantee it for halfway around the world, just before takeoff." And to monitor that, we tapped into the the seal cavity. So if it started leaking, coolant would go out, go through the firewall into a little bottle, and when we could tell it was leaking, give us some maybe warning. I was really tired. I mean, hardly any sleep. After I argued with a Sri Lankan controller with his Pakistani accent and HF radio, and he wants to know what type of aircraft, and I tried to tell him and spell it and phonetically, and I kept thinking, if that son of a gun doesn't know what a Voyager is, that's his problem. And then it all came apart. What type of aircraft? He didn't figure that out. He said, "Say departure point. Kilo Echo Whiskey Delta." He says, "Okay, say destination. Kilo Echo Whiskey Delta." And then he's sitting there and he says, "I ain't never heard of that. Go look it up in the library." He comes back and finally figures it out that this airplane he's talking to that's over his country came from California and its destination is California. Obviously, that's got to be a ruse. They're messing around on air traffic control, and they don't want to do that, and rightfully so. And he started the admonishment of chewing out in all the HF net that all the people can hear me, the world's greatest fighter pilot. Now, when we're healthy, we suffer fools very poorly. But let me tell you, when I've been awake for halfway around the world, you're really tired. And I call back home, and I says, "Hey, I ain't calling these guys anymore. I'd give anything for the 20 minutes of sleep that I was messing with this guy." Wasn't his fault. So I never talked to air traffic control after that. I says, "You guys call them on the phone, make up any routing you want, but for God's sake, don't tell them where we are. For a lot of reasons you can imagine." Okay. The sun's just about ready to go down. We're about 8,000 feet. We're over the subtropical island of Sri Lanka, which is just right off the southern tip of India, right? Beautiful place. And I'm looking out the window, and I see this beautiful tropical paradise. And I see the most gorgeous white coral beach. The sand was just perfectly white. And right in the middle of that was a black macadam runway, about this long. And I looked down, and I thought, and I tried to fantasize myself. I says, "You know what it would feel like to land in that thing?" And I kind of let it sink into my psyche. It says I could turn and Gina would put the gear down. We could roll out on final and I could touch down. And oh my God, I could instantly go to sleep. The most beautiful, restful sleep I can imagine. I was just fantasizing about how good that would be. And Gina came up, showed me the little bottle that had coolant in it. And that meant that the seal was leaking. Damn. But wait a minute, he only guaranteed it for halfway around the world, and where were we? Exactly halfway around the world. Now, old Dick that's really tired, I mean, he'd give anything to sleep. You just fantasize about it. And I'm looking down at that runway, and I see that little bottle, and I think, hey, I can go to sleep. And it's not going to be my fault. It's going to be somebody else's fault, and I can quit right now. And I was in a turn, and I was trying to decide who to call to coordinate this abort. And not a word of a lie, I heard my mother's voice as clear as I've ever heard her in my head. She says, "Dick, you know damn well you're not going to quit. Remember, if you can dream it, you can do it. And the only way to fail is if you quit." And I heard her voice so clear. And I rolled the airplane back and put W back in the compass. And I sat there that night as the sun came down all around us and the black Indian Ocean's out ahead of us. And I could see the southern tip of India in the twilight sunset. And ahead was Africa and the Indian Ocean. And I kept thinking, Dick, this is the stupidest thing you've ever done. Because a couple hours from now, along, that thing is going to leak and blow the coolant out. It's going to overheat and seize. And we've got to decide whether at midnight we're going to bail out or ditch this airplane. And you're going to wish the hell you hadn't. Now, I look back on that and I think, you know, that took a lot of courage. You had an opportunity to quit and you didn't. Only other thing that the Dick did that I did shut down from fatigue. It was about 2 days after that out in the middle of the Atlantic. Everything was fine, sun was shining in, and I was sitting there and there wasn't a whole lot to do. And I was sitting there and all of a sudden I felt things shutting down. I wasn't sleepy like I wanted to go to sleep. This thing starts shutting down. Remember 2001 Space Odyssey when he starts pulling the plugs on Hal, then he starts talking funny and stuff? And all of a sudden, everything starts shutting down. And I was looking at my hands, and I had no idea what they were. What does this hand do? I knew it was important. I looked around the cockpit, didn't have any clue about what anything was there. I knew my hand and that little thing, sticky thing there was important, but not a clue what it was. And all of a sudden, you can feel yourself just slowly starting to shut down from fatigue. And at the very last second, I called Gina, and I thought, well, maybe Gina knows that her pilot's going away. And I told her. And I don't remember a thing after that. For some reason, she got me out of the seat, and she, whatever, she shoved me or helped me or anyway. A few hours later, I woke up, and I was asleep in the back. And I woke up and refreshed and ready to get on with it again. So fatigue was something. But I want to tell you, Bert, there was no fine way under any circumstances that Dick would fail this flight because of a human failure because he got frickin' tired. That was not going to happen.
I hear that, Dick.
Okay.
I hear that. And every time I hear you tell that story and other stories, it reinforces our concern on the ground.
Okay, but Salina was not going around the world.
No, not Oshkosh. I was going to tell you the other two things that we thought that were risks based on real data that would tell us that the flight would not happen. And I started to tell the people the other two things at the museum, and I stammered and realized that I'm 76 years old and I forgot what they are. But every day during that flight, as that crew continued to perform, as it continued to move west, it was something that was happening that in general was much better than was expected. Or can you accept that?
What's that? Oh.
Well, what I just said.
Okay, good.
Did you understand what I said? Every day, as the flight continued way past the kinds of experiences we had before. You flew at night just once before the flight, and you flew it in smooth air, able to look out at lights over there where you could land half the time and lights over there where you could land. That was a real low stress conditions, probably the best conditions. But you can argue with me all you want, but I'm not telling you my feelings. I'm just telling you that the folk on the ground were very concerned that the flight could be done based on crew fatigue. And as the mission proceeded, we obviously got more optimistic and more excited. And I'll never forget the time that I first saw the airplane after 9 days.
Yeah, you got to tell them about that. It's very emotional.
Okay. Mike Melville had the job of doing mission control at night. In general, most of us slept on the airport. We didn't go home during the flight. I had another program going on with a lot of schedule pressure, schedule incentive, money, that we had to fly the Starship by in time to fly it to the NBAA show. So I was going back and forth, okay? So I was never one of the principal persons that was required to be in mission control. In other words, if I wasn't there, the mission planning that was set up, and I asked for this, that it wouldn't jeopardize the mission because Bert wasn't there at that time. So I had some doing different things. First of all, you know, right in the middle of the flight, when the airplane, you know, who knows what was going to happen. It was on the cover of Newsweek during the flight. It's kind of weird. They had these big old satellite dishes on trucks set up on Mojave for 10 days. And here's the press. We didn't let them in mission control. We didn't give a window so they could look in there. There was a feeling if it was a problem, oh, don't let the press know. And I felt differently. I said, if there's a problem, be candid about it. It's much better to let the press know what happened at the time and let them cover it than to have to explain later why you didn't let them know.